The Seminole calls this land the grassy water. And the Seminole, who knows the Everglades of Florida as no white man can, has named them well. This is a sea of sawgrass. A dark primeval place whose restless, whispering water is shadowy and often ominous life. The sluggish, thin-blooded alligator. The lethal cottonmouth moxon. The vigilant Louisiana heron. The resplendent, graceful flamingo. This is a land of cypress swamps which gleam like the reflected image of a lost world. Here in the glittering light of the swamp, all living creatures must be wary, for the faintest of sounds may be an overture to death. Nowhere else in the world is there anything like the sheer abundance of wildlife. Nowhere else is the awe-inspiring spectacle of survival in nature so dramatically illustrated. Here millions of wood ibis, cormorants, and a multitude of other species build nests, lay eggs, live, and die. Here the brilliantly colored coral snake coils, the deadliest creature in North America. Its bite will kill a man in 7 minutes. The human intruder is dazzled by the color he finds in the Everglades. His eye is arrested by myriad hues, so brilliant that they singe the sky and set it aflame each evening over the Pahai Oki. The Seminole knows the Everglades with a profound intimacy. His paddles broke the stillness of the swamp more than a century ago. He took refuge here from American troops who tried for 40 years to move him to Oklahoma. But neither his relentless enemy nor the equally relentless swamp could break him. Left here to perish, the Seminole had to learn how to live in the great swamp, and he has become its master. In this grim and shadowy world, all creatures hunt and are hunted, and only the quick and the strong can endure. He possesses a deep sensitivity to nature, and to him, the Pahai Oki is a world of infinite variation and beauty. He drinks in the quiet loveliness of the roseate spoonbill, probing the shallow waters in search of food. It is as though there were a bond of understanding between him and the exotic bird. He marvels at the miracle of life, at his boundless capacity to flower and flower again. Here, cupped in the fingers of a dead mangrove, he finds two infant wood ibis, storks, less than 4 hours old, their tiny throats still palpitating in the agony of birth. Here is the rare sandhill. With knowing hands, he pulls his way homeward in the late afternoon, instinctively alert to both the wonders and the dangers of his world. Resting in the moist mud and cushioned by a matting of weeds, the alligator's nest reveals itself to his eye. This monstrous mother will kill to defend her young. Seminole villages are built on patches of high, dry ground called hammocks, which rear themselves sporadically in the swamp. Each village is composed of one family. Its size depends on the number of married daughters, for it is the custom of the tribe that husbands live with their in-laws. Their huts are called chikis, and they are so built that when the hurricane howls about the hammock, the winds will pass through. Great houses fall before the hurricane, but the chiqui remains standing. Seminole women are famous for their statuesque appearance and quiet dignity. Tribal law forbids them to speak to white people, though rarely does a white man visit their village. They scale garfish, speared by the men. Though inedible, its silver armor is a rich prize. These scales will be boiled, bleached, and sold to white traders for eventual use as sequins. The children are handsome, but strangely quiet. Perhaps their silence is the result of their heritage, for in the dark years when the tribe was hunted, children were trained from infancy never to betray their presence. They are taught at an early age to care for their younger brothers and sisters, and their responsibility is great, for man is not the only creature who prefers to live on the high, dry hammocks of the swamp. The Diomac rattler is a persistent, vicious intruder. And these deadly, poisonous snakes are not respecters of age. The Seminoles' independence of spirit is legend. He fought a great man to a standstill for half a century. To remain free, he learned to survive in the swamp. He is proud, aloof, unyielding. But in the Indian's culture, there is a symbol that spells peace, goodwill, brotherhood. Tobacco has always meant these good things in the life of the Indian. It has always meant the softening of hearts, and it has not lost its meaning today. The Indian gave tobacco to the world. This man remembers when a ceremonial pipe smoked in council signified the presence of a virtuous bond between men. When Columbus came, he found the Indians smoking with a hollow, forked stick called a tobago. It was from this primitive pipe, the tobago, and not from the leaf itself, that tobacco got its name. And today the Seminole borrows the cigarette from civilization, for he finds it serves him well. The sewing machine is the second device they have accepted from the white man's world. Hand-operated models are found in virtually every chiqui in the Everglades. This instrument has become the vehicle for their original art. They sew brilliant geometric designs on narrow bands and work them together to make striking skirts. Behind the dazzling result are hours of intense labor and incredible patience and skill. Civilization's most extraordinary gift has been the airboat. This flat-bottomed craft has endowed the Indian with the power of the bird and the fish. Driven by an airplane propeller, the boat cannot foul in the weeds. It travels 40 miles per hour in 1 foot of water as smoothly as over glass. Yes, science has cut his weed chains and set him free, made him the undisputed master of the Pahai Oki. The headlight is the fourth device he accepts. It gives him a strange hypnotic power when he glides over the swamp in search of frogs. The light holds them transfixed, freezes them, as the spear darts among them and brings in as many as 101 catch. Frog's legs are a delicacy in demand by the great resort hotels. They bring a good price and help the Seminole earn a living. But he wouldn't consider eating one. On Saturday afternoon, the Frogger's airboat will appear in the Tamayami Canal. Today, he has business in the white man's world. Miami. In the Seminole's language, it means literally, very large. And indeed, it is the largest place he has ever seen or dreamed of. He comes here to the fisheries to sell his frog. With his business done, he walks through the city, gravely contemplating this place of commerce and concrete. It has its awe-inspiring beauty. And now and again, he will find a friendly face, or sign, or this other world. There are moments in this place called Very Large in which he doesn't feel so small and all alone. But mostly, the Seminole in the city feels trapped, uncertain, lost. One must be wary, for surely there is more danger here than in the great swamp. Yes, this most self-contained and fearless of mortals treads softly among the tall buildings, confounded by the restrictions he finds on every side. And at night, he walks the city as in a dream. The air is charged with weird and grimacing lights. Millions of multicolored eyes blink with such fervor that they singe the immensity of the night. This is not for him. Some things he will take from the white man's world, but this he rejects. And he goes home content to the Pahai Oki. Today the Seminole is again a hunted man, but now it is the engineer and the farmer who penetrate the great swamp. Their drainage canals lacerate the landscape. Their torches burn off the stubborn brush. Their grumbling tractors ready the soil for planting. Yes, the Everglades are disappearing. Where there was wilderness yesterday, today there are furrows, tomorrow crops. Each year, thousands of acres succumb to the white man's genius. Citrus fruits glimmer in the warm sunshine, hanging heavy on the bough. This is gold for the white man, but for the Seminole, it is a symbol marking the twilight of his world. Along the tourist routes of South Florida, one may discern the decay of a proud way of life. But even in decay, the Seminole displays the courage and dignity intrinsic to him. Alligator wrestling is extremely hazardous. There could be a fatal slip before the reptile is stroked to sleep. Yes, even in decay, he displays the qualities of a tragic hero. The force which once was his bitter enemy has today become the Seminole's great friend. The United States Office of Indian Affairs, through its agency at Fort Myers, offers the tribe positive assistance. The superintendent, an Indian himself, is the instrument of the government's patient and enlightened policy. He can only offer assistance, only invite the Indian to live on a reservation. At Brighton Reservation, Seminole children come out of the hammocks to attend a day school. Here, under competent teachers, they will be better equipped for contact with the white man's world. At school, they are fed well-balanced meals. Often, these children succeed in persuading their parents to improve the family diet. Together with education, health is a cornerstone of the government's Indian program. At Dania Reservation, Seminole mothers bring their children to the government clinic. Economically, the government is endeavoring with much success to launch the Seminole in the cattle business. At Big Cypress Reservation, where once there was swamp, where once a hunting and fishing culture was possible, the Seminole is reaping the harvest of the range. This branding was an historic occasion. It marked the division of profits and the repayment of the government's loan to the enterprise. Later, in open meeting, the government's policy was reviewed and approved. Then the leader of his people, the Christian minister, called upon them to face their changing world. He read in the great transition through which the Seminole is passing the promise of a better life. He saw the need for spiritual help as well as for the great gifts of government. But this too would come to the swamp people. He saw a vision of promise poised above the sawgrass and the whispering water. He saw hope in the Pahai Oki.